So this weekend we're talking all about Vrindavan. How many of you have been to Vrindavan? How many people here? Think you have it?
Okay, wonderful.
Well, you're in Vrindavan now. This is Govinda Dweep in his breath. And this is also Vrindavan. We'll talk a little bit about that. But before we begin talking about Vrindavan, I want to ask you a question. What is the best thing about the Hare Krishna movement?
Abhimanyu.
There must be something.
Too many things to find out. I think for me it's probably scripture.
Scriptures, books.
It's so deep, it's never ending.
Definitely. Yeah. Anyone else? What's the best thing about the Hare Krishna movement?
Kirtans, because you know that, like other religions, like hymns and stuff like that, you don't see people like jumping about like they're doing kirtans, so
yeah.
I think that's different.
It's like a rave, huh? And there it goes. So what's the best thing about the Hare Krishna movement?
I'd say like the higher taste.
The higher taste. Someone else?
The association, the opportunity to learn from every single person.
So, association, devotees.
The prasad.
Prasad. Thank you for admitting. Anyone? The local devotees?
Doing japa.
Japa, chanting.
Yeah.
I think it gives some actual solutions to suffering and death.
Solutions.
Different ways you can serve the Lord.
Service. There's one thing about this movement which is really special that no one said so far.
Prasadam.
He said prasadam, but you're too busy thinking about prasadam. This one thing that makes all of this special, and without this, none of this would be special.
Krishna.
Krishna. Krishna is the best thing about the Hare Krishna movement. Because if you don't have Krishna, you don't have prasadam. Because food plus Krishna equals prasadam. If you don't have Krishna, you don't have kirtan, because music plus Krishna equals
kirtan.
Holiday plus Krishna equals sleeping plus Krishna equals
dreaming.
Resting, isn't it? Devotees never say, "I was sleeping, I was resting." I was resting. Whenever Krishna comes into the equation, then it becomes transcendental, then it becomes really amazing. When Srila Prabhupada was teaching the Gurukul boys, like in one of our schools in Dallas, and he asked the Gurukul boy, "What's the best thing about, what's your best subject at school?" So the boy said, "Maths." So Prabhupada said, "Oh, you like maths?" So Prabhupada said, "Let me give you an equation. Anywhere plus Krishna equals Vrindavan." So Vrindavan is very, very special because Krishna is the center. And whenever Krishna becomes the center, then life becomes amazing. Krishna is very, very attractive. I'll tell you a fire story actually. Last year I was in Nigeria and I was traveling around. Anyone been to Africa? Okay. So Africa is an amazing place, beautiful place. And I was in Nigeria and in one city in Nigeria where Bhakti Tirtha stayed a long time actually. And I was in one marketplace. So you know, like it's like chaotic, yeah, like so many stalls, so many people like loud, shouting, selling so many things. So I went past this one stall and this person, he was selling so many things. And on his shop front, I was looking around at all the things he was selling, and in the corner I saw a bunch of little Krishna DVDs. It's just in some market in Nigeria. So I thought, wow, like there's a devotee here. So I was trying to find out the shopkeeper, and then finally he came to the front, and I said, "Oh, Hari Bol!" And he just looks at me like, "Hari, what?" So then I realized he wasn't a devotee. So I was like, "But you're selling Christian DVDs," I was thinking in my mind. So I looked at him and I said, "Like, what is this? The DVDs?" So he goes, this is an amazing cartoon. So I'm like, "Really? Like, what's it about?" And he says, like, "It's about this boy, and he takes demons into the sky, and then he pulls them down, and then he sucks the life out of this lady, and then he throws these bulls into the trees." And I'm like, he's giving me that full 10th canto. And then I look at him and I'm like, "Who is this boy?" And he goes, "This is Krishna." And then I look at him and I'm like, "Who's Krishna?" And he looks at me and he says, "I don't know, but he's a bad man." It's far out. Because what he had done is he had just gone onto YouTube and he had just seen this little Krishna cartoon and he'd just become so attracted, like, "This person is far out." Anyway, then he thought, "I'll make some money from it as well." YouTube downloaded, and he downloaded all the videos, copied them onto DVDs and just started selling them. And he didn't know anything about devotees, never been to a temple or nothing, just attracted by Krishna. So Krishna is very, very attractive. Krishna is like, that's what Krishna means, isn't it? The all-attractive. What are Krishna's six qualities that make him all-attractive? Anyone remember?
Strength.
Beauty.
Renunciation.
Knowledge.
Fame.
Beauty. Did you already say
that?
Wealth. In Sanskrit, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashriya Gyanavairagya Yascheva Sanam Bhaga Itingana. So this is the verse. It's given by the father of Vyasadeva. Father of Vyasadeva, his name is Parashara Muni. So he basically described that anyone who has these six qualities in full, only that person can be considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So some people have some of the qualities. One time there was a really beautiful lady, and then Einstein was there. So she said, "We should have a child together. Because imagine a child which has my beauty and your knowledge. That would be like an amazing combination." And Einstein looks back at her and goes, "Yeah, but what about if the child ends up with my beauty and your knowledge?" So, the thing is, some people have some of the qualities. We have some knowledge, we have some beauty, we have some strength, but not in full. Krishna has everything in full, and therefore he's the most attractive, the possessor of all qualities. So Vrindavan is basically that place where Krishna is the center. Yeah? The scriptures explain there's five types of Vrindavan. Well, four types, we can say. Four main types of Vrindavan. There's Vrindavan in the spiritual world. What's Vrindavan in the spiritual world called? Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah? Goloka Vrindavan. Then that same Vrindavan comes to the earthly planets. And when it comes to the earthly planets, then what type of Vrindavan is it called? What?
Gokul
Vrindavan. Yeah, so spiritual world is Goloka Vrindavan. In the material world, Vrindavan comes and it's known as Gokul Vrindavan or Bhoma Vrindavan. Then it's also said that Vrindavan can be created by the vision of a devotee. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada established temples and called them New Vrindavan. Has anyone been to New Vrindavan in America?
Yeah.
You may have been. So, by the vision of a pure devotee, they can create a temple, keep Krishna in the center, and then build Vrindavan around it. And they said that that place is non-different from Vrindavan. So coming to here, Govinda Dweep. Dweep means an island, and Govinda is Krishna's name, meaning he who gives pleasure to all the cows. So Govinda Dweep is also Vrindavan. So you don't need to, you can save on the airfare too. Just get a cheap Ryanair flight, jump on a barge, and you're in Vrindavan. So this is Vrindavan also. So number one, Vrindavan is Vrindavan where? In the spiritual world. Second, Vrindavan is? In the material world. So you can go to that place, 2 hours from Delhi. And there's also Vrindavan which is created by the vision of a devotee. And there's a fourth place. Can anyone guess the fourth Vrindavan? In your heart. Is that what you're going to say?
Because I was at the mind.
Yeah, the mind and the heart. It said that the heart of a pure devotee is also Vrindavan. Because Krishna is in the heart of a pure devotee and Krishna is installed there, then Krishna is residing there, and therefore the heart becomes Vrindavan. And he said that all of the pastimes of Krishna are taking place within the heart of a devotee. So a devotee is constantly absorbed in Vrindavan. One time Srila Prabhupada, at one point, I think it was 1972, he introduced singing Jaya Radha Madhava before the class. And the first time he sang it, he began chanting, and Jaya Radha Madhava is all about Vrindavan and the spiritual world. And the devotee saw that one tear came from his eye. And he couldn't sing anymore, and he stopped. And that was Srila Prabhupada, who was always living in Vrindavan because he had Krishna within his heart. So he said that the saintly people are like holy places personified. When a saintly person comes to a place, because they're carrying Krishna in their heart, they make that place Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada, wherever he went, he was taking Vrindavan with him. So he was in the Lower East Side. I mean, the Lower East Side is like the center of the material world. It was really like hardcore place. I mean, I don't know what the equivalent in Birmingham would be. It's like Smedic or something like that. I don't know. Is that where you live? I don't know, I grew up in London, so like Halston, like, you know, some of these places, they're quite heavy places. But even the devotee goes there, they turn it into Vrindavan. When Prabhupada lived in the Lower East Side, he lived in a place called the Bowery. The Bowery was like the lowest place ever. He said that when Srila Prabhupada would go into the Bowery, then on the ground floor there would be drunken people who would just be lying on the floor. And Srila Prabhupada would have to walk over them to get to his room. Just think of what kind of place Srila Prabhupada was living in. He said, one day I walked into my Bowery apartment, and on the ground floor, there was a man who was lying there, and he was dead. Can you imagine going into the place where you're staying, and there's just a dead person lying in the corridor? And just like, okay, that's the Lower East Side. That was what kind of place it was. So it was really a heavy place. Because Srila Prabhupada carried Krishna within his heart, he made the Lower East Side into Vrindavan also. So Vrindavan is that place where Krishna is the center. Wherever Krishna is the center, then that is Vrindavan. And so we have the opportunity in our lives to make Vrindavan around us according to our consciousness. If we have the proper consciousness, then Krishna will be the center and everything around us will turn into Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada gave us these books to read, 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because these pages tell us all about Jai Shishi Radha Govinda Ki. These pages and these stories tell us all about the residents of Vrindavan and what kind of thinking they have, what kind of consciousness they have. And when we develop this same consciousness that the residents of Vrindavan or the Brajavasis, when we have that kind of consciousness, then we can create Vrindavan around us. So we've come here to learn about Vrindavan, We've come here to bring Vrindavan into our hearts, and we've come here to install Vrindavan in our hearts so that we can eventually go back to wherever we are and make that place into Vrindavan, because we always want to live in Vrindavan. We don't want to live anywhere else. Once I was in Vrindavan, and I was just about to leave Vrindavan, so like the next day I was going to leave Vrindavan, so I was walking on the road just the day before, and then I met one Vrajabasi, like a sadhu. So he said to me, like, what are you doing? So I said, I've been here for 3 weeks in Vrindavan, and I'm going back to London tomorrow. And he just gave me this really dirty look. You're in Vrindavan. Like, why do you want to go back to London? He said to me, I said, you know, I've got service there, and like, you know, I'd love to stay in Vrindavan, but I can't stay in Vrindavan. And then he looked at me and he said, all reality outside of Vrindavan is simply a dream. And all dreams in Vrindavan are a reality. And I was like, wow, that's pretty far out, you know. All reality outside of Vrindavan is just a dream. And all dreams in Vrindavan become reality. Vrindavan is known as Chintamani Dham. So wherever you go there, whatever you pray for, whatever you dream about, that happens. In Vrindavan they have Kalpa Vriksha trees. So sometimes you see devotees hugging trees. You think like, why is this guy hugging a tree? Okay. They said if you hug a tree in Vrindavan, and you are Kalpa Vriksha tree, and you pray for something, then it comes true. So we have Varun. You know Varun, the Mridanga player? Kirtaniya Varun. His dad took him to Vrindavan, Ramanuja, and then Varun hugged the tree. And later on his dad asked him, like, what did you pray for? And he said, I prayed that I could become a really good Mridanga player. And he did. Yeah, it's good. His dad said, you should have prayed for Krishna prayers. You were playing Mridanga. So, all reality outside of Vrindavan is a dream. We're not residents of Birmingham, we're not residents of London or Watford, thank God. We're residents of Vrindavan, that's our true home. So sometimes we go to India and it feels like Prash was telling me yesterday, I went, I was like, go to Vrindavan. He's like, no, I don't want to go to India, man, I get sick there. So sometimes we go to India or Vrindavan and it seems very foreign. Mm-hmm. It's like completely different culture, isn't it? Like rickshaw drivers and this, everything's noisy and it's just totally different culture. But actually, that's our home. Maybe not everything as it is now, but the sense of Vrindavan, that's actually our true home. So, what I want to talk about a little bit today is, what is the mood of Vrindavan? What is the consciousness that creates Vrindavan? And the first most essential quality is that everyone in Vrindavan is mindful of Krishna. They're thinking about Krishna all the time. Yeah? How many times a day do you think about Krishna? Sometimes, one devotee said, Prabhupada, sometimes I forget Krishna. Prabhupada said, no, all the time you forget Krishna. And sometimes you remember him. Yeah. So practically most of the time, Krishna is not so much in our minds. You know, we're thinking about so many other things. When I joined the temple, one of our devotees who was leading us, he said, he actually gave everyone a watch, and the watch would go off at different times in the day. And he said, and he gave us a 1 week experiment, and he said, every time the alarm goes off, I want you to note down what you were thinking about. So that it would go off at like three times in the day, so you'd be doing whatever you're doing, and then when the alarm would go off, you'd just catch yourself and think, what was I thinking about? Anyway, there wasn't much Krishna there. Because our mind is full of so many other things. It's like even now we're sitting here in the class, and we're hearing about Krishna, we're in the Dham, we're in front of the deities, we're with devotees, but still our mind is going in so many different places, isn't it? There's so many things on our mind. Well, I was driving once and there was a sign in the back of the car and it said, "Do not disturb, already disturbed." So that's, it's like that, isn't it? We're so disturbed by so many things in the mind that it's very, very difficult to think of Krishna. So therefore, what we have to do is we have to put pictures of Krishna everywhere. We make our password Krishna 108. That's Anki's Wi-Fi password. So we make our passwords Krishna. We put pictures of Krishna around us. You know, we play kirtan around us all the time. We like somehow that we have to force Krishna into our minds because we're not thinking of Krishna. But in Vrindavan, they're thinking of Krishna all the time. All the time. Like the gopis, they're just thinking of Krishna, just constantly when he's out tending the cow, tending the cows with the cowherd boys, they're constantly singing about what he's doing and they're thinking about him. And the moment when Krishna plays his flute, so there's a certain time in the day when Krishna, underneath a tree called the Vamsivat tree, you can go to that place in Vrindavan today, at a certain time in the day he plays his flute. And whatever the gopis are doing, some of them are doing housework, some of them are dressing their children, some of them are cooking, some of them are, you know, putting their bangles on or whatever. Whatever they're doing, they just drop everything and run to Krishna. Because Krishna is constantly on their minds. So Vrindavan consciousness means to always be very mindful of Krishna, to always have Krishna in your thoughts. And that's the spirit of Vrindavan. Once I was traveling in Vrindavan and we went to a place called Varshana. So Varshana is a very beautiful place, that's where Radharani was, where she was in her childhood. And in Varshana we spoke to this one old lady and she told us that since I was a very young girl, my parents taught me to do one thing. And we said, "What did your parents teach you to do?" And she said, every morning when she would wake up, so she would be lying on her bed, and every day when she would wake up, her eyes would open, and then she would immediately shut her eyes again. And then what she would do with her closed eyes, she would step out of the bed, still with closed eyes. And then she would feel the wall, and then with closed eyes, she would feel the wall and make the way to the door, still with closed eyes. And then she would step out of the door, then she would, you know, go down the stairs with closed eyes. Don't try this at home. And then she would walk downstairs with closed eyes, then she would walk into the front room, still with closed eyes. And then she would go to the temple altar, the home altar, and then she would open the curtains and then open her eyes. And the first thing she would see every day was Krishna. Because that's Vrindavan. Krishna is the first place in the mind. So that was very beautiful to think of that. She said, every day I did that till today, for many, many years. Like, I wake up in the morning and I don't see anything. The first thing I see is Krishna. So you can also do that. Maybe not going down the stairs and all that stuff. But you can keep a picture of Krishna beside your bed. And every day when you wake up, the first thing is, look at Krishna. And pray to Krishna. The devotees sometimes do that. When they wake up in the morning, the first thing they do is they pay obeisances. When I joined the ashram, I never knew. Like, devotees would be in their sleeping bags. And then they would wake up in the morning and then they'd be still in their sleeping bag. They'd be like bowing down with this like sleeping bag over there. I thought, what are these guys doing? And then one devotee used to like pay obeisances in the sleeping bag, you know, like in his sleeping bag, paying obeisances in that position. And he'd just be there for like half an hour trying to catch some extra rest. But it's like that, that the first thing in the day, think about Krishna. So, Krishna should always be in our mind. Be very mindful of Krishna. And the reason that we do sadhana, and the reason we do chanting, reading, all of that stuff, is it hard to think of Krishna when you're chanting? Yeah, it's hard to think of Krishna, isn't it? It's hard to even think of Krishna sometimes when you're right in front of Krishna. Sometimes we can be right in front of Krishna and just thinking about ourselves. One time I was in a house in Leicester, and I was chanting japa back and forth in the room, and there was a beautiful picture of Krishna Balaram. So I was chanting japa and I was walking towards the picture, and then I was walking back, and then I tried walking back towards the picture, walking back. After 1 hour, I realized I'm walking towards this picture of Krishna Balaram, like beautiful. I'm chanting japa, it's the early morning, it's beautiful, you know, time of the day. But every time I walk towards Krishna and Balaram, instead of seeing Krishna and Balaram, all I'm looking at is my own reflection in the glass. Have you ever done that? Compassionate, isn't it? We do that sometimes. You're in front of a picture of Krishna, and Krishna's right there, but we're looking at, you know, how we look in the glass of the picture frame. So that's our situation, that we're not so mindful of Krishna. Right now we're very mindful of ourselves. So therefore we chant, we read, we associate with devotees, and all of this is meant to help us naturally think of Krishna. So right now we have to force ourselves to think of Krishna, but eventually it will become very, very natural that you can't stop thinking about Krishna. Rupa Goswami says in a beautiful verse, Yuvatinam yatha yuno, yunam cha yuvato yatha, mano bhi ramate tadvan, mano me ramatam tvai. Rupa Goswami says a prayer, and he says, just as the minds of young boys are naturally attracted towards young girls, and just as the minds of young girls are naturally attracted towards young boys, allow my mind to be as naturally attracted towards you. So it's like that, isn't it? Like when a boy and girl are in love, then they don't have to be like, okay, I have to force myself to think about this person. It's like whatever you're doing, you're just thinking about that person. You're looking at your phone, when's the next message going to come? And looking at the same message again and again, you know, like trying to decode, you know, like, because we're always thinking of that person. It's so natural for us, like when we're in that kind of state of mind, to like think of someone. So one day it will become that natural to think about Krishna. It would just be like, whatever you're doing, Krishna just keeps coming back to your mind. You can't get him out of your mind. When Krishna left Vrindavan, then the gopis were just thinking of Krishna all the time. And then Krishna sent Uddhava to come back to Vrindavan and tell the Vrajavasis that Krishna will come soon, don't worry. So Uddhava came back to Vrindavan. And then Uddhava said to one of the devotees, one of the gopis, that Don't worry, Krishna will come back soon. And Krishna has sent me a message to tell you that don't worry that Krishna's not here. If you think about Krishna, then Krishna will be here. So Uddhava said to the gopis, don't worry, just think about Krishna and Krishna will be present. And the gopis looked at Uddhava like, are you nuts? Are you crazy? The problem is not that we should think of Krishna. The problem is that we can't get Krishna out of our mind. He's driving us crazy. That's the situation. Once all the gopis were together, and then they were asking each other, what did you dream about Krishna last night? So one gopi said, I dreamt this. Another gopi said, I dreamt this. They came to Radharani. She was quiet. They said, Radharani, what did you dream about Krishna last night? And Radharani looked at all of them and said, dream about Krishna? Dream about Krishna? All night I was thinking about Krishna, I couldn't even get to sleep. What to speak about dreaming about Krishna? So that's the situation, that the Brajabasis are very, very mindful of Krishna. Another quality that we can see in Brajabasis, Vrindavan consciousness, is that they're very, very grateful. One of Krishna's best friends was Sudama. And Sudama, although he was very, very poor, he was very, very grateful that Krishna has given me so much of my life. His wife once told him, I want you to go to Krishna. Krishna is very rich. He's in Dwarka. He has many, many palaces. I want you to go to him and ask him. He's your good friend. He'll give you anything you desire. I want you to go and ask him for something. Sudama said, Krishna gave me so much in my life already. Why do I have to go and ask him for anything? He said, no, you should go, you should go. So reluctantly Sudama went. You know the story. He took some chit rice with him to offer to Krishna because he didn't have anything else. When he met Krishna, he was so pleased, so happy to see Krishna, that he began speaking. Krishna said, what have you brought for me? So he was embarrassed, you know, like, here's Krishna with so much opulence, and this is what I'm going to give him? Finally, Krishna said, no, I know you have something, give me that. Krishna took the rice from him and very much appreciated it. And Sudama was so grateful just to be with Krishna that he forgot to ask for anything. And he left. And as he was walking back, he realized, oh my God, my wife sent me here to ask for something from Krishna. But I forgot to ask. And then what happened? He came back to his house, his humble dwelling. And when he arrived back, it had turned into a palace. But you see, Sudama was so grateful that Krishna has already done so many things for me. If we want Krishna to be in the center of our life, if we want to live in Vrindavan, then we must always be very, very grateful. How many times do we feel in our life that, oh, I wish I did this, or I wish I had this, or I wish Krishna would do this for me, or why did this happen to me? We always see what we don't have. We always see the bad things or the negative things. But oftentimes we don't see how much Krishna has done for us. So a devotee is very, very grateful all the time. Like sometimes we do this exercise, you can even think about it now. Can you think of a time in the last week when something happened to you that you didn't deserve? Can you think of a time? Okay, think of a time in your life when something happened to you that you didn't deserve. Krishna?
Maybe someone said, like, being quite rude.
Someone being quite rude to you? Prash?
I lost quite a lot of euros.
You're still remembering that. Anything happened to you that you didn't deserve?
I passed the entire mission in the past.
Okay. Someone else?
Getting told off was a mistake that wasn't mine.
Okay. Being accused for something you didn't do?
Being hurt by people that I really care about.
Say again? All of those things. It's very interesting, isn't it? Like, six of you spoke, and five of them were all bad things. It's quite unique, actually. Kelly, right?
Yeah.
Kelly's very unique, actually. Because whenever you do this experiment and you ask people, think of a time in your life when something happened to you that you didn't deserve, we only think of a time when a bad thing happened. You lost your euros. You're getting back. We only think of a bad time. Is it? But how many things happen in your life, good things that you didn't deserve? Do you then look up at the sky and say to Krishna, oh, why me? Why me? Gratitude means not just to see everything that you don't have, but it means to see everything that you do have. And when you have gratitude in your life, your whole life changes. Some people, the biggest problem in their life is that they don't have gratitude. And when you don't have gratitude, everything looks bleak. But when you have gratitude, when you're actually grateful, then everything, all good quality. You said gratitude is the mother of all good qualities. When you have gratitude, you'll be humble. When you have gratitude, you'll be tolerant. When you have gratitude, you'll want to serve. When you have gratitude, you'll naturally feel compassion for others. And when you have gratitude, you'll naturally feel love for Krishna. Because you'll think, how much Krishna has done for me. So Brajabasi's Vrindavan consciousness means to always be very, very grateful. For whatever. In Sanskrit, the word for gratitude is kritagya. Krita means to do, and gya means to know. So the Sanskrit word for gratitude literally means to know what has been done for you. Krishna is doing so much for us, isn't it? I'll tell you a story because the World Cup's on, so I've got to talk a bit about football. You know? Who's the greatest football manager of all time? What do you reckon? No. So you're not a football fan, huh? No. You're not a football fan. Anyone a football fan here?
Probably
who do you think one of the best managers of all time?
Sir Alex Ferguson.
Alex Ferguson. Sir Alex Ferguson. Yeah, he gives the respect to this thing. He probably gives respect to others. Trinidad people. Yeah, Alex Ferguson was probably one of the best managers of all time, isn't it? Man United. A manager of a football team only becomes famous because of the players, isn't it? Because the Man United had all the good players. Roy Keane, David Beckham, all those guys, yeah? Eric Cantona. You guys remember? Or am I speaking before your time? Say it. Yeah, Roy. So Alex Ferguson, he basically became famous because of all of his players. If they weren't good players, he would have been a no one. So you know what happened at one time? Alex Ferguson wrote a biography of his life. And you know what he did in the biography? He basically criticized every single one of his players. So then this guy was like this, he was lazy, and this guy was just after money, and he basically just dissed all of his players. All of his players that made him famous. And you know the guy he dissed the most? David Beckham. He said, you know, his hairstyle. I think one time David Beckham wore that sarong and all that. He was like, what's this guy doing, you know, like. So he basically just took he just criticized David Beckham completely. And you know what he then wrote in his biography about David Beckham? He said, and you know what David Beckham's biggest mistake in life was? He goes, his biggest mistake was that he married Victoria. Can you imagine, like, if someone writes their biography about their life, and it goes worldwide, and he's just completely just said that about you, like in a public forum. So in his biography, he writes, the biggest mistake is he married this lady. And they went to David, all the reporters went to David Beckham. And they said, like, you must be like, oh, you know, like fuming. And you know what David Beckham said? He said, I can never be angry at him. Whatever he said, whatever he's done, however he's criticized me, he's the one that gave me the break in my life. If he never gave me that break for Man United, I would be no one. And he said, therefore, I don't hold anything against him. Whatever he said, but I have full respect for him. That's pretty amazing. Like, he so many negative things, but he saw that this person did something for me, and I can never forget that. So that's Vrindavan consciousness, that we look at Krishna and we think, yeah, so much Krishna has done for me. Okay, I'm not as good a singer as all these other kirtaniyas. But how much Krishna has done for me. But sometimes they think, oh, I wish I could sing like that as well. Or that, you know, I wish I could speak like that person. Or I wish I could, you know, be as famous as that person, or whatever it may be. We're always seeing what we don't have. But Vrindavan consciousness means to be very, very grateful. So the first thing about Brajabasis is that they're very mindful of Krishna. The second thing is that they're very, very grateful about their life. The third thing we can see about Vrindavan consciousness is that they're very, very helpful. You can see where this is going, there's rhymes here. Mindful.
Grateful.
Helpful. Helpful means Vrajabasis, those in Vrindavan consciousness, are always looking at how they can serve Krishna. They're always looking for an opportunity to serve Krishna. So sometimes, you know, we don't have that service attitude. I've seen it many times, and I've been part of that as well. Like sometimes the prasadam comes out onto the table, and then the queue goes really huge. But there ain't no servers, you know. And then someone comes out, they're like, we need some servers. We need some servers. Otherwise no one gets prasadam. And then everyone's just still standing in the queue. Like, so sometimes we're not having like so much of a service attitude. We're waiting for everyone else to do it. Vrajabasis, they're always looking to serve. Isn't it? One day Krishna was there and he saw the fruit vendor. And the fruit vendor in Vrindavan at that time, there was no money, there was no euros. Don't worry, you wouldn't have lost that. The way they used to do it is they used to just barter. So you give one thing and you get another thing back. So Krishna saw this fruit vendor and thought, I want some fruits. So what did Krishna do with his small hands, his tiny hands? Much smaller than mine. Krishna picked up some grains. And Krishna began running towards the fruit vendor. So the first thing is Krishna's hands were small, so there are hardly any grains in there anyway. And when Krishna began running towards the fruit vendor, all the grains began like falling through his fingers and everything. So by the time he got there, practically there was nothing there. So he said, there's a few grains. The fruit vendor was in such a spirit of service, like, I just want to do something for Krishna. She just took whatever few grains there were, and she just loaded up Krishna with as many fruits as she could give. And Krishna, you've seen the picture, Krishna's holding all the fruits. Just for a few grains. Because that was her mood. It's not about what I can get from Krishna, it's about what I can give to Krishna. And then what happened? After she gave the fruits to Krishna, she turned around and what did she see?
Oh.
Yeah. Her basket had filled up with all jewels. And that's the effect. Now sometimes we think, oh, I'm serving Krishna, but who? No one appreciates me. Like, I spent hours organizing the retreat. I'm not saying you think like this. Talk about myself. And these guys are having a great time. They don't know how much it took, you know, for me to do the background work, you know, all of that. We're thinking, but Krishna is seeing. It's between you and Krishna. There's a beautiful poem, you can check it out sometime, it's called Do It Anyway. Anyone know this poem? It's a poem by Mother Teresa. And she used to have this poem by her bedside, and it's called Do It Anyway. Anyway, there's many lines to it, but she's like, sometimes you give your best to people, and they don't appreciate it, still give your best to people anyway. She says, sometimes you have good intentions, but people misunderstand you, always think about good about people anyway. And then she says, in the final analysis, it's not between you and them. It was always between you and God anyway. So it's between us and Krishna. So, Brajabasis have that service attitude. They're always thinking, what can I do for Krishna? And the more we have service attitude, the more we're actually desiring to do something for Krishna, then we actually develop a relationship with Krishna. Love comes from service. Like if you say to someone, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, but then they ask you to do something and you're like, no, I'm watching the World Cup quarterfinals actually. And it's like, you say you love me, but then what are you doing for me? So love comes from service. Yeah. Like one time again, we were in Vrindavan, and this really old man, really old, like must have been over 80, he came out and he said, come into our house, come into our house. He's like, okay, we'll come into the house. So he took us into his house, like a very simple, like hut. And he said, I want you to come and see Thakurji, like his deity. So then he took us into this room, and there was this tiny, like, altar. And he opened, he was so excited, he opened, and there was beautiful Radha Krishna deities. He said, and then he looked at them and he said, they're my life and soul. He's worshipping these deities. And then we asked them, like, how did you begin worshipping these deities? So he said, when I was 8 years old, a terrible thing happened. We said, what happened? He said, when I was 8 years old, my mother and father died in a car crash. So he said, here I was living in this house. I have no brothers and sisters. I have no other family. And one day when I was 8 years old, my mother and father just died. So here I was, just alone in Vrindavan. And he said, I didn't know what to do. He said, but one thing I did know was that when I was growing up, I saw that my mother and father were worshipping Krishna. And therefore, I didn't know what I should do in my life, but I knew one thing I should do is worship Radha and Krishna, because that's what my parents did. So he said, at 8 years old, I began worshipping Radha and Krishna. So he said, like, how do you worship them? He said, every day I dress them. Every day I bathe them, every day I dress them, every day I make garlands for them, every day I feed them, every day I sing for them, every day I decorate their altar, every day I clean out everything for them. We're like, did you start doing this when you were 8 years old? He said, yeah. We said, how long would your worship take you every single day? He said, sometimes 10 hours, sometimes 12 hours, I'd just be worshipping Radha Krishna. Like, wow, when you're 8 years old, that's amazing. And then we said, and then what did you do when you grew up? He said, I just carried on worshipping Radha Krishna. And we said, like, yeah, but then what did you do when you got older? He said, I just worship Radha Krishna. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, like when you became an adult, what did you do? And he said, I just worship Radha and Krishna. He said, did you do anything else in your life? He said, no. And then when we walked out of the house, we spoke to the neighbor and we said, how old is this person? He said, most likely he's over 90 years old. And we thought, this person, for 82 years of their life, just worshipping Radha and Krishna, 15, 16, 17 hours a day, just these forms of Krishna. That's service attitude. And if you worship Krishna like that, if you worship the deity like that, why will Krishna not speak to you? Sometimes we hear these stories, the deity spoke, you know. Why will Krishna not do that? It's dependent upon our service attitude. So Brajabasis are always, Vrindavan consciousness means to always be in the mood of service. What can I do for Krishna? What can I do for Krishna? So, maybe tomorrow I'll carry on with more qualities of what Vrindavan consciousness is. But just wanted to immediately start introducing it. That this is basically Vrindavan. Vrindavan is not just a physical place. Vrindavan is that place where Krishna is the center. And Krishna becomes the center when we have this consciousness of being mindful, always trying to remember Krishna, being grateful, always seeing what Krishna has done for me in my life, and being helpful, always thinking of what we can do for Krishna. So the more and more we develop these qualities in our life, and the more and more we'll actually see that Vrindavan is all around us. And in that way, we'll always be living in Vrindavan wherever we are. Hare Krishna. So I don't want to go on too long because I know there's prashada, which is one of the best things about the prashada. But before we do, I don't know if anyone's got any questions or comments or practical things you want to ask on anything that I've said about Vrindavan, about Vrindavan consciousness. It'd be nice if someone asked something, then we can have a bit more of a discussion, maybe about how to practically apply this. Anyone have any questions? Yeah.
So, do you know when you do visit environments or other people always say you need to prepare your consciousness, don't go with like tourists and stuff like that. So, can you give us some practical advice on how to prepare ourselves?
Yeah. So, it's said that Vrindavan is like an ocean which is covered by a thin layer of oil. So if you look at it superficially, you'll look at the body of, and you'll just think, it's just full of oil. But if you're able to get a little bit beyond the surface and go, then you'll find there's a beautiful ocean beyond. So when you go to Vrindavan, one of the biggest challenges is that we just see everything from a superficial point of view. It's noisy. It's like everyone's trying to rip you off and get a donation. It's like you can't even get English toilets. There's only Indian toilets, hole in the ground. You know, like this, you can't get Wi-Fi access. You know, like nothing works. It's hot. So when we see it's polluted, there's rubbish everywhere. When we go to Vrindavan and we see Vrindavan superficially, then we don't actually see Vrindavan. So the first thing is that if we actually want to see Vrindavan, then we don't see Vrindavan through the eyes, but we see Vrindavan through the ears. And that means if you go to the holy places, the most important thing is to go with devotees. Because when you go with devotees, then what will happen is that by hearing them, by hearing their realizations, by hearing their narrations of Krishna's pastimes, you'll begin to see a different Vrindavan. So one important thing is to go with devotees, to hear about Vrindavan before you go. Oftentimes what you can do is there's these handbooks on Vrindavan, so you can read up about all the pastime places before you go, so that when you go, you can be in a better state of mind. The other thing is, when you go to Vrindavan, it's said that you shouldn't spend too long in Vrindavan. You'd spend maybe a week or 2 weeks, 3 weeks. In the first instance, Srila Prabhupada said Vrindavan is mainly for inspiration. Because the danger is if you go to Vrindavan and spend too long there, you may become familiar. So you can develop a lot of spiritual benefit in your life by being in Vrindavan, but you can also create a lot of offenses and go back if you don't interact in the right way. So it's said that it's good to go for a certain amount of time with devotees, hear a lot whilst you're there. While you're in Vrindavan, also try to do some service. So you can serve the devotees, sometimes devotees take a broom and they go to Radhakund and they just sweep. Or you can go to Radha Damodara temple where Srila Prabhupada stayed and do some service there. So when we approach Vrindavan in a mood of service, then we get to see more of Vrindavan. And ultimately when we go to Vrindavan, we should be in a very prayerful mood. So oftentimes you can go to different places and recite prayers, sing songs, ask Krishna to help you with certain things that you're struggling in your life, and in this way derive more of the benefit and the potency that's in Vrindavan. So many things like this you can do. But I would say the most important thing is when you go to Vrindavan, go with devotees. Never go to Vrindavan alone, because we'll not see Vrindavan. We only see Vrindavan if we're with devotees. Any other questions? Yeah.
I'm sorry, Professor Chakraborty. So, one of the points you said about the four types of Vrindavan is that where the devotees have the vision, Like, for example, I'm seeing a temple.
Yeah.
Like
devotees had a vision for this to be Vrindavan, so they installed Radha Govinda, they built a temple, they built many places around it, and now Krishna becomes the center. So this place is like Vrindavan.
In that case, can you consider it like visiting the dam? Like all the preparation and things you do when you visit the dam applies here and applies to wherever?
Whichever Vrindavan you go to, you
know?
Yeah, so the same thing. Yeah, the same thing. Wherever we go, we do the same things. We prepare our consciousness and... if you're in the right state of consciousness, you can have the same experience here that you would have in Vrindavan. Because ultimately, our experience of Krishna consciousness is not dependent on externals. It's dependent upon our own consciousness and our own good consciousness. Therefore... But then someone may say, then why do we spend so much time going to the real Vrindavan? Then what's the point? If this is Vrindavan, then why do we also go there? Also, there is a special benefit to go to the actual place of Vrindavan. And the reason is this. Vrindavan is said to be like a cup. A cup which is full of bhava. Bhava means spiritual emotion. So it's said that Vrindavan is like a container of spiritual emotion. It's just overflowing with love for Krishna and spiritual emotions of great devotees. And therefore it's said that if you go to Vrindavan, even what you're not qualified to experience, if you come in the proximity of the cup of Vrindavan, because it's overflowing with emotion or love for Krishna, then just by being there, sometimes it overflows and one drop lands on you. And then you get to begin to experience something that's beyond your realization. But just because you're in the proximity of a very spiritually surcharged place, you actually get a realization. So therefore, going to the manifest Vrindavan in this world that Krishna created and Krishna was there is also very, very powerful. But yeah, ultimately, if you do these things and you prepare your consciousness, anywhere can be Vrindavan.
Thank you. It's a similar question. The question was wherever Krishna is the center, that's Vrindavan, then what was the importance
then, what's of Vrindavan? What's the importance of going to
Vrindavan? Actually,
the other reason we go to Vrindavan is because many, many other devotees go to Vrindavan. So it's interesting, sometimes you go to Vrindavan, not just because Krishna's there, but because all the devotees of Krishna are there. And where all the devotees of Krishna come together, then we get more of an experience of Krishna. So ultimately, we go wherever there's devotees of Krishna, because that's powerful association. And the most devotees of Krishna are in Vrindavan. So therefore we go Vrindavan to also get Vaishnava association. So that's why Vrindavan is still very, very important. So we're planning to do a retreat to Vrindavan, right?
That's in November.
Excellent. So yeah, it would be a very, very wonderful thing to go to Vrindavan. It's a very, very special place. Anyone else? Any questions?
You earlier mentioned about Srila Prabhupada, like when he was in America, he was in the rough neighborhoods and stuff like that. If he's a pure devotee and stuff like that, why does Krishna put a pure devotee in like tests like that? Is it just for our inspiration, or is it there's other reasons for that?
So why does Krishna put pure devotees through such difficult situations? So one of the acharyas, he gives an example like this. Anyone ever been to a jewelry shop? Yeah. Anyone own a jewelry shop? If you go to a jewelry shop, then you see sometimes there's a ring, and it's in a box. You know those little boxes. When you open the box, there's a ring, and what's the ring set in? What's it set in? Yeah, it's like a foam, isn't it? There's like a foam. And what's the color of the foam?
It's red. Or white.
Usually dark red. White. Serious. Just blew my analogy. Usually. Jewelry shops of bygone ages, not Kaliga jewelry. Usually the ring is set on a velvet foam, which is dark, generally. But we'll give you. There may be some exceptions. Usually it's black, or it's dark blue, or it's dark red. It's usually a dark color. Why is that?
Sticks out more.
Yeah, because it sticks out more. Then the brilliance of the gold, the brilliance of the diamond comes out even more on a dark background. So sometimes what Krishna does in the life of pure devotees is he puts a very, very dark background behind them, a very challenging situation, very, very full of struggles. And what does that do? It makes us realize how amazing this devotee is, that despite all of those challenges, despite all of those obstacles, still they were right there with Krishna, just worshipping Krishna. So ultimately Krishna puts pure devotees through these challenging situations to give us inspiration and to glorify His devotees more. That, you know, sometimes we look at our life and we just think like, oh, so many problems, you know? Once I was in Soho and I went into Govinda's and there was this guy, this devotee, and he was sitting on a chair and he was just like this, he had his hand in his head and he was shaking his head and he could see he was completely stressed and he said, there's so many problems, you know. And then I walked up to him and I said, what's up? He goes, just so many issues in life. And he's just like, he looks at me and he says, how much can one person do? And above him there was a picture of Prabhupada and I said, well, quite a lot actually. Like one person can do quite a lot. So he looked up and was like, oh yeah, shit. So sometimes we look at the problems in our life, we think, oh, so many issues and I'm trying to do so much for Krishna, why isn't Krishna helping me? But then what will you do? You go back to Prabhupada's life, you open up the biography of Prabhupada's life, and then you start thinking, you know what? Maybe my problems are not as big as I think they are. So the life of a pure devotee, so many challenges are there and it leaves no more room for excuses why we can't practice bhakti. Oh Prabhu, I can't practice bhakti because my health is not good. Couldn't wake up for Mangalarti, Prabhu. I've got to take care of my health. I mean, sometimes you have to go and stuff, but Prabhupada had 2 heart attacks at sea. How's that for good health? Oh, Prabhu, I can't do anything for Krishna because I don't have any money and no one's supporting me. So here's someone who came to America with 40 rupees in his pocket. And you know what? At that time in America, you couldn't even do anything with rupees because no one would even accept it. Prabhu, I can't do anything because it's just me. No one else is helping me. There's not the other devotees, they don't want to help me. So then go back to Prabhupada, who came alone and no other devotees were there to help him. It's just me. How can I do it by myself? Prabhupada was alone. I can't do service because I can't relate. It's totally different. These people are totally different to me. He was Prabhupada, who came from India, who had never been outside America, and then came in the middle of hippie culture. It was totally different for him. It's completely alien culture. One time Prabhupada went into a shop, and then he bought all the goods, and then he went to the checkout counter, and then the person, you know, and then he said, that would be $27. So Prabhupada was like, well, I'll give you 15. It's like, because that's what you do in India, isn't it? Like, the first price is never the real price. And you have to do a bit of bargaining. The person's like, wait, where are you from? This is America, you know? Like, he was in a different culture. One time Prabhupada walked into a this hippie concert, and there was four people on the stage dancing in banana costumes. Like they were dressed up as bananas, dancing. So Prabhupada walks in and he looks at the devotee and he goes, "What is the meaning of this?" So the devotee said, the hippies are celebrating because they've found that if you take banana skins and you dry them under the sun, don't try this at home, by the way. You dry them under the sun and then you light them and you inhale the fumes, then it's like a cheap substitute for whatever it was they were smoking. So Prabhupada's like, "Oh my God." Like. And then the devotee said, "But Prabhupada, the good news is that these same hippies, they're donating 2 crates of bananas to Jagannath every single day." So Prabhupada said, "Very good." And the devotee said, "Their only condition is they want the banana skins back." Prabhupada said, "When I came to your country, I could never imagine these things." So Prabhupada is he came to such a different culture, but he just connected with people. He just connected with them. So, you know, like, "I can't preach because no one respects me." You know, when Prabhupada was in 26 Second Avenue, in that building, all the hippies were also staying. And in the morning, there was only one bathroom. Yeah. I mean, we've got 3 bathrooms, right? So they had to queue up for the bathroom. And Prabhupada would be right there in the queue. This is Prabhupada. He's Krishna's pure devotee, a Mahabhagavat. And they didn't even know to just let him go through. But he just was humble. One time Mukunda Maharaj was with him in a car and he had an apple. So he said, like, "Oh Prabhupada, would you like an apple?" So I said, "Yeah." And then just before Mukunda Maharaj gave it to him, Mukunda Maharaj said, let me just take a bite first. And he just took one bite. And goes, "Okay, yeah, now." Not in a bad way. Like, he just didn't know. Like, that's what you do, and like that's what friends do in American culture. You take a bite, you have a bite, okay. Can you imagine giving Prabhupada eat an apple? Prabhupada, he took it. It's like, okay, they don't know. So Krishna puts his pure devotees through such challenges so that we then look at our life and think, whatever problems I have, whatever I think is stopping me from becoming Krishna conscious, it's not that important at all. And that's what Krishna shows us. So there's no excuse. There's no excuse not to be Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna. So it's nearly 9 o'clock. I went on a bit. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you.